Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up? What's happening? Welcome in. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube too, at the Team 980. We is me, Craig Hoffman, him, super producer, Anthony Haney. Anthony, say hi to everyone on this Wednesday if you could.
What's happening?
What's up?
Chilling.
Got water in my bottle. This is a remix, Anthony.
Love that for you, man.
There's some people who got that reference. There's some people that didn't. Today on the show, Ben Standing is going to join us a little less than an hour from right now. Ben is going to be talking about Dan Quinn, Adam Peters, and what else he heard at the NFL owners meetings. We will start hearing or letting you hear from Dan Quinn in just a moment. Also today, really terrific article by this newcomer, Anthony. Actually, I don't know if people have heard of this guy. He's not very well. David, what? Aldridge?
Yeah.
Aldridge is the last name. I said that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just kidding. He's in the Hall of Fame. And David wrote a really terrific article for The Athletic, where he works, about the state of the NBA as part of an ongoing series that they are doing at The Athletic on why the NBA is seemingly dropping in popularity, why some of the ratings are down specifically, but also game attendance, and you have all these teams that are tanking, and is it a crisis for the NBA? And when it comes specifically to style of play, I thought it was really interesting to read David's article, and part of the reason it's great is because he's DA, and he's got quotes from LeBron and Durant and Curry and on down Giannis, like all the Hall of Fame GOAT guys. He talked to him for this story because he's David Aldridge and he himself is a Hall of Famer and he can do that kind of thing. And so really cool article from David that I want to discuss at 5:30. But let's get things started with Dan Quinn and what he had to say yesterday at the NFC Coaches Breakfast. Quinn speaking to a gaggle of reporters. It's just to paint a picture here how these work, having been to them in the past. Basically, each coach sits down at a table. All the local reporters start with their own coach. So there typically is about a 20, 25 minutes of this hour. And you literally just sit down with a coach and you have breakfast. Everyone puts their recorders or their phones, or they set up their cameras or whatever down, aim them at the coach. You sit down, you're having some eggs, some bacon, and you fire away at the questions. And after about 20 minutes, maybe you wander off somewhere else and you go get the other coach's sound. The last year that I was doing this, or I was on the beat and went to this, was the year that they traded for Alex Smith, or the last one I remember. And so I went over on the AFC morning and was like, I'm going to go talk to Andy Reid about Alex Smith for a little bit, and got a couple of questions in and was able to talk to him. I remember one year going over to Sean McVay's table, the first year that he was in LA, and talking about what he was going to take from Washington. And, you know, it was funny. I remember the Rams PR guy trying to wrap everything up, and Sean's like, no, I know him. Like, Craig, go ahead, which is very nice of Sean. And so you get a chance to talk to not only your head coach, but others about various players. So, like, had I been there this time around, I might have gone to Kyle Shanahan and been like, hey, tell me more about Javon Kinlaw. What didn't work for you guys in San Francisco, and why do you think that that it'll work for him in Washington? Why do you think Adam wanted to have him? And so you can do things like that where you get some intel on free agents, on whoever coaches that came over. If you hired a new coach, like if there's someone that maybe worked with Cliff, or someone that worked with Joe Witt Jr., maybe I'd go ask about that. Especially if it was last year's breakfast. So that's how this goes down. But ultimately, most of these are from the local Washington press. And starting off with Dan Quinn being asked about Deebo Samuel and what kind of impact he can have in 2025 on this offense.
Coaching against him, this is an explosive player. Not just the scheme. But after, you know, he gets the ball in his hand, sometimes you can tell the toughness of a player with and without the ball. And he has both of those, the explosive nature. So to add a player of his caliber into a, you know, a tough and strong group, I mean, we're really pumped about it.
So when, as a defensive guy, like, to defend a guy like that, what were the challenges going against?
Alignments, one, where he could be in the different locations and not just play in traditional spots. So sometimes when you there's a unique player and you're wanting to give special attention, but they're inside, outside, in the backfield, all the spots. And fortunately, also, like, you know, Cliff's really equipped at that too, you know, and how to be unique and feature players, you know, into their best spots. So I'm really pumped to have him.
It's going to be really interesting to see how they deploy him and what he's got left. I mean, there's a chance that Deebo Samuel's cooked. There just is. He's a incredibly physical player. And in that way, the way that running backs tend to have a short shelf life, there should be a healthy fear that Deebo Samuel had a running back shelf life where he was incredible for a long time and he's still got something, and the nature of the wide receiver position lets you maybe get away with a little bit longer, certainly than running back, and he obviously hasn't taken as many hits as a guy like Ezekiel Elliott did early in his career. But that physicality of just not just taking a pounding, but delivering a pounding, running through people all the time, like, is there a chance that this is done? Of course there's a chance. But I tend to think that last year, Deebo was stuck in a bad situation in San Francisco. It was a weird offensive year for them. They had a bad year overall with health and injury. And 2 years ago, he was still a very, very productive player, like 800 yards receiving, you know, making plays after the catch. And even last year, you know, some of the per catch numbers were still pretty good. It just was harder to get him the ball because all the other dudes were out, and offensively or defensively, teams could focus on Deebo a little bit more because it was mostly him and George Kittle. No Ayuk, no McCaffrey, no some of the other guys that they've had in the past. So it's going to be fun to watch Cliff use him. And obviously part of that is an easy button for Jaden Daniels. Last bite we'll play for you before we take a quick break, come back and let you hear more about the offensive line and some very interesting things DQ had to say about that, is what Quinn wants to see from Daniels in year two. He was great in year one. If he just does that for the rest of his career, Jaden Daniels probably go to the Hall of Fame. But what can he actually improve on in year two?
There's a lot that all of us, you know, and we call them workouts. You know, these are the things that we want to get better. So for him, some of the technique ones that, like a lot of quarterbacks, is footwork and, you know, body position of where to go, you know, where to throw. We thought he made a lot of improvement extending plays early on in the season. They were extending to run, and then now they got extending to throw the ball down the field. So having that balance of doing both of those, that's a big deal. But for him, the footwork side of things, that's one that I know he's going to dig in hard on this year. I think if you'd ask a lot of quarterbacks, that's where the power comes from. That's where it's at. So, but that's one for sure that he's digging in.
The footwork specifically for Daniels, where I think there's the biggest room for improvement, is movement within the pocket. It's not because the thing about him is his release is so quick and his ability to get the ball out on time is so good. So it's not like get the ball, get in your drop, hit the back foot, throw. Like, that stuff's awesome. Even some of the quick stuff, the screens, like he's able to get his feet set and get the ball out quickly. His off-platform stuff was really good last year. So his ability to get his body in a good position to throw, very, very good, and probably better than expected in year one. Where there's still a lot of room for improvement, for as mobile as he is, for as good as he is at getting out of the pocket, can he move subtly within it to keep a good base underneath him and create a little bit of space and throw like the great, great, greats have done? Guys like Brady were the best at it. Burrow's unbelievable at it. There's other guys who are really good at manipulating the pocket without escaping it. And I think that's the area probably where Quinn is talking about, that there's a lot of room to grow for Daniels in the footwork. But when you're as good at escaping it as him, you just be like, why would I stay in here when I can get out? And that obviously was more than successful in year one. When we get back, though, maybe he doesn't have to move around quite as much because the offensive line is better in year two for him than it was in year one. You got to hear what DQ had to say about the shifting pieces up in front of Jaden Daniels next on the Hoffman Show. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app, streaming live on YouTube too at the Team 980. Let's continue hearing from Dan Quinn. Yesterday, NFC Coaches Breakfast. Plenty of interesting things that he had to say, including talking about the offensive line. And He talked about some of the changes and then just talked about kind of the depth of this group. And I think both are worth listening. So first and foremost, obviously, Laremy Tunsil's the headliner. But what else is going to change on the offensive line? And where do we look at with the depth of that group?
Talk about the line of scrimmage. You also add Laremy Tunsil. What does that do for the team? And what does that do for the rest of the O-line and Brandon Coleman?
Yeah. The addition of Laremy and playing out at tackle, he's had such experience and done it at a high level. And so when you can add somebody of that caliber, you know, that's a big deal. And so adding him right now into our mix, we're really pumped to have him. We can't wait to get him here. It's going to be a fun group to coach. These are like the guys we've added. Adam and his staff did an excellent job. We were very specific about the commanders and who we wanted to have as part of this. And so Laramie's an ideal fit for us.
And then for Coleman, who, rookie season gave you a lot at that spot.
Yep.
Probably moving now.
Yes.
What's the plan there?
He'll go to the right side.
Tackle?
Yes.
Wiley kick in for Cosby?
Yeah, you're getting way too far down the line. We got a lot of practice to go still. So, he'll go on the right side. But as far as tackle or guard, we'll start at tackle. That's where he's got lots of experience at, and we'll go there first. So that's the plan.
I think, I'm glad JP asked. Two, I'm glad that Dan Quinn has a great sense of humor. Because this is this thing that we do this time of year because we have nothing else to do. Well, this guy could go here, and this guy could go here, and we swing around, and how do we get our best five on the... They don't know yet. One, we don't know each player's current form. Like, what does Andrew Wiley look like in 2025? What does Brandon Coleman look like in 2025? What does, when we get closer to the season, how far away is Sam Cosmi? How does that affect the decision-making of, we probably want to start Brandon Coleman at right guard, actually, but we know eventually when Sam comes back, we're going to kick him inside, and he's actually only 2 weeks away. So, do we want to waste that time? Do we want to put him at left guard? It's too early. They don't have to make a decision yet because they don't have all the data. But I think it's really great by the same token that DQ did expand a little bit and acknowledge that there are multiple possibilities here. This is someone who is going to start at right tackle. But Brandon Sheriff also started at right tackle. And two practices in the training camp, he was a right guard. And he's been a right guard ever since. And he's been a borderline all-pro player at that position for a lot of years. Obviously, he's declined here later in his career and Jacksonville and the whole deal. But he was an awesome, awesome, awesome right guard for his entire time in Washington and for much of his time in Jacksonville. Maybe that's Brandon Coleman's future. And if he can play at Brandon Sheriff's level, like Brandon Sheriff was a top five pick. Brandon Coleman was a third round pick. That's a hell of a pick by Adam Peters. That's how it turns out. But he also might work out at right tackle. But I think the thing is he hasn't played very much on the right side at all. So, there's a chance that he doesn't work out over there. And, if he winds up as a left guard, like that might not be a bad idea either, because it's not quite switch hitting in baseball where your hands are in a different position. I mean, they are, but like it's not quite that much of a flipping around, but it is very similar where your kick step is the other way. Your outside hand is not your inside hand. Your inside hand is not your outside hand. You practice that punch. You practice the different ways you engage and disengage in a block and in a block shed disengage from a block shed in a bunch of different ways, all go in one direction. Your eyes are trained to go to your right inside to scan versus to your left outside. Now that switches. If you're watching for a twist or a stunt coming from your inside, that inside is now another side. And if he doesn't take to that stuff, switching him back to the left side and playing him at guard might be the better outcome. By the same token, Wiley's going to have to figure out that stuff too. He was a pretty decent guard in Kansas City for a couple years, but like they move him out to tackle. He hasn't played guard in a long time. Does he readapt to that position? Do they want to? Do they rather him have swing tackle capabilities? And the answer is right now, they just want to keep their options open. And I think that is the expected answer, but I'm glad that DQ had the chuckle with it. Because if they made a decision, okay, fine. And I'm sure that they have a plan A. And I think that's the other thing too, right? They don't necessarily want to give away plan A just for the narrative purposes of, okay, well, if we know that it goes sideways and all of a sudden we're on plan B or C, like they don't want to have announced that. But it's a little different being like, yeah, we're going to start him here and we'll see what happens. And that's you know, where I think a lot of the headlines were written as he's gonna play right tackle. It's like, no, we're gonna start him at right tackle, and then we'll figure out what happens. And maybe that changes in the draft too. What happens if the best player available at 29 for them by far is a tackle? Like a distinct, like what happens if they have a top 12 grade on Josh Simmons, the tackle out of Ohio State, and they're more comfortable with the medical than other teams are, and all of a sudden Simmons is available at 29, and they're like, this dude's the best player on our board by a mile. They just draft him and put him at right tackle and say, you'll replace Tunsil when Tunsil's done here in a couple years and Tristan Wirfs it. You could. And by the way, Simmons might not be ready for the season because maybe his knee injury is not quite back yet, although he's moving around at his pro day a little bit. So these are the things that they're considering. There's a lot to still happen, but it's good to know kind of where the wheels are going to, at least where they're going to be start to set in motion. Same thing can be said on the D-line. A lot of changes there, a lot of options there. Here's Dan Quinn.
At a couple of the spots, I'm really excited about competition. And it really does, like, you know, kind of foster like an environment where it's so competitive and you're pushing for it. The best teams, you know, that I've been a part of had that. And at the line of scrimmage, that's so important of how we want to go and how we want to play. And so I love the, you know, the guys that we've added. We certainly did a lot of research on who they were, not just as ball players, but as men and teammates. And so that was really important for us. How important our locker room and, you know, our attitude and who we are and what we want to be. That was really important part of it too, Nikki. So we're excited to add these guys to the crew, and I'm really excited. You know, just in a few weeks, we get to, you know, see everybody again. And the process of bringing new players and onboarding them with the current veterans, that's an important step. And there's two parts to it: one with the veterans who are new, and then the second lap will be, you know, with the rookies, you know, in May. And so both of those processes are important to onboard them as quickly as they can to understand our standards, the culture, how we want to do things. So we're pumped to have them.
And I think there's a lot of guys that have been brought in that are not only interesting football players, but terrific culture guys. And that is one thing I'll say about, God, am I going to go down this road again? Yeah, I am. I'm already here. Like the John Allen experience. And I hate to feel like I'm bashing John because I don't think John's a bad dude. I just think that there were I think he and DQ and the new regime were on different pages. Both of those pages can be correct in the certain circumstances, but considering Dan was trying to bring in something new, having the incumbency of someone like John perhaps caused some tension. And I also, frankly, on a much more critical note, a little less gray area, like a couple years ago when Chase Young and Montez Sweat and all those guys were here and the four of them were playing together and they were undisciplined as hell and doing all kinds of crazy stuff on the field. And John, you know, and is punching Duran and like all the stuff that went down here. It's not like that D-line room has been a model of consistency and a model of great effort and a model of what it now means to be a commander. And Javon Kinlaw, while he's got his issues as a player, based off what we've seen so far in his career, some of the troubles stopping the run, etc., like that dude plays his face off every single snap. You know, we saw what Johnny Newton did last year and immediately why they like him so much, because he plays so hard. Guys like Sheldon Day, they're limited as players, but there's a standard there. And a guy like Dietrich Wise coming in from New England, like that dude is going to play hard. They are looking for a certain tone to be set. And I think what we saw last year is that puts a really high floor under your team because you can accomplish a lot in the NFL by playing hard. And so I'm excited for this group. Well, I 100% acknowledge it needs more talent. I do not expect this to be an elite D-line group the way it is currently constituted. And frankly, I don't expect it to be with anybody they could draft either. Like a Donovan Ezeraku would be amazing because I think he can add some real pass rush juice from day one. But realistically, like how good are they going to be this year? If they can play together and guys like Day go from like major rotation players to minor rotation players, and you know, a guy like Wise can be a better edge setter, and Cleveland Furl goes from starter to backup and things like that. Like I think they can be better than last year, but they're not going to be elite. But I do think it's an exciting group in a certain way because there is that kind of floor underneath them. As terms of what that means in wins and losses, Vegas has spoken. Pre-draft, 10.5 is the number. 10.5 wins for the Commanders in 2025 for Vegas. And we were curious to ask you at 301-230-0980. This was going to be our vibe check Tuesday yesterday, but the Buzz Williams news knocked that to today. So a vibe check Wednesday at 301-230-0980. Over, under, 10.5 wins for the Commanders in 2025. We'll take your preliminary bets, but only metaphorically. We're not actually taking your money. I'm not a radio bookie. But we will take your calls next.